if you feel your TV screens have been dominated by the World Cup over the last few weeks and you've been looking for an alternative that will keep maybe both you and the soccer fanatic in your life happy, we might have the answer. Movies that feature just a little bit of footy. We thought that might be a solution for you. Stephen Benedict is here to help us through. Are you a World Cup fan? Have you been watching, Stephen?
Well, you know, I'm sorely tempted to say on political grounds I won't be watching it because it's coming from Russia. You know,
yeah.
Russia today, I don't want to have anything to do with it. But I am a bit of a soccer fan.
What we decided is to choose the kind of the movies that the people like myself who know absolutely nothing about the World Cup and people like yourself who are pretty into it, that we can actually watch together. So where will we start?
I think a good place to start is a movie called Gregory's Girl. It's a Scottish film from the early 1980s. It was written and directed by a guy called Jim Forsyth. What he did was he made a movie. He set the story in a school. It's about a teenage boy called Gregory, and he plays for this hapless, absolutely hapless football team. And they're so bad that the coach decides to hold trials to try to get new players to come in. And that's when Gregory's girl turns up. The character's name is Dorothy, and she's played by Dee Hepworth. Now, here's a really, really interesting thing. She never played football in her life until she was cast in the film. And the thing was that the director, Forsyth, had seen her in a commercial on TV and said, "I want that girl." She'd never played soccer before, so she was given 6 weeks of intensive football training. It just shows how hard it is to learn how to play soccer. Just 6 weeks, that's all it took. And by the end of which, you know, she was able to tell one end of a football to the other. And what happens in the story is that it begins with Gregory being the striker for the football team. But because he's so bad and he can't score a goal, Dee comes on and she trials for the team and she starts scoring goals. So they place her as the striker. And he's demoted to the goalkeeper. So he's down the other end of the pitch. Now, obviously, all the boys have a massive crush on Dee. And then it's a question of, will Gregory be able to win the girl? So the thing that was very, very interesting, though, Orla, was the movie came out in 1981. And the previous World Cup happened in 1978. And England had failed to qualify. And suddenly all the media put this massive hype on the Scottish football team that are going to do really, really well. And they didn't. They went out to Argentina in 1978. And their first game they drew with Iran, 1-1, and that was a complete shock. The next game they lost 3-1 to Peru, which is a complete disaster. But then, amazingly, they played Holland in the next game. Now, Holland were the runners-up in the previous World Cup, and they were the favourites to win in Argentina.
Yeah.
So they're expected to absolutely pace Scotland. But Scotland went out and defied everyone's expectations by winning the game 3-2. And if you talk to anybody any Scottish person who's very, very familiar with their cultural history, they will tell you that Archie Gemmell is a small midfielder for Scotland, scored an absolutely magnificent individual goal. Do you remember Train Spotting?
Yeah.
Right. There's a moment where the guy goes, "Oh, that was better than sex." And he's actually having sex with his girlfriend while watching Archie Gemmell score the goal in the World Cup.
Fantastic.
So the funny thing is, that's, you know, I think the movie would have been partially inspired by Scotland's, shall we say, semi-failure in Argentina.
Ah.
But we have a lovely, lovely scene here where Dee starts playing football for the team, and then Gregory obviously has a crush on her. And this scene takes place in the changing rooms after the game where they start comparing scars and bruises.
Stuck.
Look at this then. My big brother threw a bike at me. I was only 7. I can only see it in the mirror. It's quite nice, isn't it? Nice shape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ronaldo, that was a boy in Italy last summer. He said it was like a new moon. Very romantic. La luna.
Ah, sì, sì. Bella, bella.
Ah, parliamo italiano.
Nah, not really. Just bella, bella.
Oh, I think it's a wonderful language. It's so alive. I want to live in Italy when I leave school.
Huh?
I can speak a day language. I'm a quarter Italian and a quarter Irish. On my mother's side.
Now, you got to admit, that's an original way to fall in love. You know, being kicked in the shins and a bicycle falling on your shoulder. And, you know, it's really, and if anyone
really
hasn't seen it, it's a fantastic film. Bill Forsyth, the director, then went on to make two really, really great films later in the 80s. One was called Local Hero, and the other one was called Housekeeping. And it actually, I think it inadvertently kicked off a whole cycle of films about female athletes. You know, Americans, the movie didn't do that well in American cinema, but it sort of caught the imagination of producers. And all of a sudden, they're making movies like about baseball with women, playing baseball, ice hockey, drag racing, of all things. So, yeah, if people have the chance to watch Gregory's Girl, it was great.
What about Bended Like Beckham? Did that, how well did that do for US audiences?
Stunning. That movie was written by Chirundra Gardner, and she was a graduate of the Sundance Movie Workshop out in Utah, and so she'd written the script in that workshop, and she came back to the UK. She raised the money.
She's from the UK, isn't she?
She raised the budget for the picture. It was a very, very small, low budget film, about $3.7 million. And it grossed in over 15 times that worldwide. Oh. She earned a BAFTA nomination, a Golden Globe nomination, and a Writers Guild of America nomination for it. It's a terrific film. I mean, I don't think there's any need for us to go through the plot. But just in case, it's about Jess, okay, or Jesminder, to give her proper name. She's played Parminder Nagra. And she is born into a Sikh family, and it's an Orthodox family. Her parents are very, very observant, very, very strict. But she is obsessed with football. And her best friend, played by Keira Knightley, is Juliet. And unbeknownst to her parents, unbeknownst to Jess's parents, she starts playing. She goes for trials and tryouts with Hounslow Harriers, the local football team, coached by none other than Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. Mm-hmm. And as the season progresses, they go through all the rounds of the cup, and they get to the final, which just happens to fall on the same day as Jess's sister's wedding. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge showdown, and this is a great speech at the end. Now, you know, the film really hits all the sweet emotional spots. And we can, if you're very, very cynical of the film, you say it's a bunch of cliches and very, very predictable. But if you go with the sweetness of the film, this speech at the end really hits straight to the heart.
And I was happy because I wasn't sneaking off and lying to you. I didn't ask to be good at football. Guru Nanak must have blessed me. Anyway, there was a scout from America there today, and he's offered me a place at a top university with a free scholarship and a chance to play football professionally. And I really want to go. And if I can't tell you what I want now, then I'll never be happy whatever I do. You let her leave her sister's wedding to go to a football match.
Maybe you could handle her long face, I could not. I didn't have the heart to stop her.
And that's why she's ready to go all the way to America now.
You know, and I think the great thing about that speech, that scene there, Orla, is, you know, that movie was made in 2002, a World Cup year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we cast our minds back to 16 years ago, this is a Sikh family. The parents have come from the Punjab, I think. They're Punjabi. Mm. And so we're talking about, you know, cutting right to the heart of the immigrant experience in the UK and the unity through sport. Now, we can't underestimate the meaning of the title, Bend It Like Beckham, because Beckham Mania in 2000, I think, was reaching its peak. You know, actually, Beckham, he scored, I think, the goal that made them qualify for the World Cup. It was a free kick. They scored in the last minute against Greece. It was a playoff match. And his trademark curling free kick got them to the final. So the title was absolutely perfect. And I think, you know, Beckham and a few of the very, very famous players like Ryan Giggs, Manchester United players like Paul Scholes, make cameos in the film from when they're watching it on TV. But it's a terrific movie. Really, really great fun.
And I was going to say, it was also the one that put Keira Knightley on the map, I imagine, was it?
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. And that's the only, you know, strange thing about the film is that, you know, Parminder Nagra, she plays the lead. Mm. And it's Keira Knightley who got the massive career. Now, Parminder Nagra just went on. She had a good career in the States. She appears, I think she did a season or two with Eeyore.
That's right.
But no,
and actually, isn't Archie Panjabi in it as well?
That's correct. The actress from
The Good Wife. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, but the funny thing is that when we look back at the 2002 World Cup, which is what the movie was released in that year, we remember it because of Roy Keane when he defenestrated Mick McCarthy. Yeah. and Saipan. And so, I mean, if you go around the globe and you see the, each World Cup from a different vantage
point,
different
that's,
things to different countries.
That's true, that's true. You were talking there about teaching someone to play soccer in, you know, 6 weeks or whatever. And I was I was watching the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, the second version of it recently on Amazon or Netflix or one of them. But anyway, Blake Lively is there and she's kicking a football. And I was looking at her thinking, can Blake Lively actually kick a ball? Because I didn't see the first film. It's part of that is that she's supposed to be at soccer camp, I think, is she?
That's right, yeah. No, I think if you look at it very, very closely, you'll see in the wide shot, definitely Blake Lively is running down the pitch with the ball and she's doing a little bit of dribbles. But then they cut in for a closer shot and you only see the player from the waist down. And I'm quite certain they got in a body double.
Oh, you think?
A very, very talented footballer from the American football team. Because as we know, I mean, the American ladies, American women have won the World Cup, something that the American men haven't done. But for anybody who doesn't know The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, it was adapted from a novel, a YA novel by Anne Brasherez. And it was a phenomenal, I mean, Orla, you were saying you were seeing the second movie. Yeah. I think she's written 4 follow-ups.
Oh, has she? Oh, has she?
Hugely successful book. So it's about 4 teenage girls, Carmen, Bridget, Tibby and Lena.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this, the cast is fantastic. America Ferreira, she went on to be in Ugly Betty. Amber Tamblyn.
Yeah, Amber Tamblyn, yeah.
Yeah, and then Alexis Bledel. And, you know, she's in The Handmaid's Tale. She won an Emmy for her performance so far.
But prior to that, in Gilmore Girls.
That's precisely it, yes. And then Blake Lively was in Gossip Girl. And I think, isn't Blake Lively's husband, I think he's in the entertainment industry as well.
I think he might be.
Brian something. No, he's... Deadbeat. That's the movie he made, isn't it?
I think they tweet about their relationship a lot as well, don't they? Yeah.
yeah, and they're very self-deprecating, which is good fun. But the clip that we have here, I mean, the character that Blake Lively plays, she's sent off to Baja California in Mexico. And where she immediately gets the hots for the blonde-haired, blue-eyed coach guy called Eric. And she, all the girls, you know, this is before, obviously, Twitter or social networking. And so she writes a letter to her friends back home in the States, and this is what she tells them about what's going on in soccer camp.
Dear Lena, when I got your letter, I screamed for about 10 minutes. So, you found a hottie after all, huh? Well, me too. His name is Eric. Did I mention he's one of the coaches and 100% off limits? But I don't care. I've never wanted anything this much in my entire life. I'm still waiting for Karma Puche to send me the pants. And in the meantime, I'm throwing all my pent-up energy into soccer. Although that only seems to get me into more trouble. What can I say? I'm obsessed. And as we all know, obsessed girls cannot be responsible for our actions. Can we? Can't stop this.
So, yeah, I mean, it's very, very predictable, but it's very, very enjoyable. And as you said, very, very successful film because they made a sequel. And
there's probably more to come.
I'm quite certain, quite certain. You know.
Now, I also see you have Early Man, because I was wondering that, are there animated movies that we can think about? Early Man, I haven't seen Early Man. It's good, I take it, is it?
And so-so. Oh. I think they, excuse the pun, but sort of they hit the crossbar, they didn't score a goal.
I mean,
they've got a great track record. I mean, the movie is written, or at least directed, I think it was co-written by Nick Park.
Yeah.
Aardman Studios. I mean, they're most famous for Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah.
Which is what most people now watch on Christmas Day, I think, you know, the wrong trousers. But the amazing thing about Nick Park, we've got to remember, Orla, is that at one stage, he had won either an Oscar or a BAFTA for every single film he'd made. He started off making short films and he won every single award going for those. And then I think he made a feature, Chicken Run, which won the best feature, animated feature. But this one, the interesting thing about this one is that it was voiced by an all British cast. And I don't know whether that damaged the film on the other side of Atlantic, but it's, you know, it grossed in $45 million worldwide.
And that's not great.
No, because I think the movie cost in that region. But then again, you see, we're not taking into account DVD. Yeah. And Netflix, and so the sales, the money can tot up. But the clip that we have here, I think people who are getting a little bit tired of all the diving and feigning and fainting on the pitch and saying, oh, my little metatarsal is damaged or something. This will put people in mind of what's it like to dive on a soccer pitch.
Oh, that's not cricket, Brian. Whatever cricket is.
Nothing to see there.
Play on.
I didn't see anything.
Ow. No foul. Play on.
No. Get up. Play on.
Oh, that's way below the belt.
Oh, my leg. Oh, my leg hurts so bad.
Penalty. Well, Jürgen should get a prize for acting.
Come on. That was never a penalty.
Fine. Check the replay.
Oh, kick. Ah. Oh, my leg! Ow!
Oh, terrible foul! Beating him with sausages! Shame on you! Definite penalty.
So, but there's another one. I mean, you were mentioning there about animation. There is a movie now. It's obviously not about football, but there is a football match in it. And I remember watching it as a kid on television. I didn't get to see it in the cinema when it was on the cinema. But a movie called Bed Knobs and Broomsticks. Do you know it?
No.
This one stars Angela Lansbury. Mm. And people have likened it a little bit to Mary Poppins in that it mixes live action actors and then mixes in the animation. It won the Oscar for Best Visual Effects back in the early 1970s. I think it was 70 or 71. But here's an interesting thing about it. It was directed by a guy called Robert Stevenson. And although it came towards the end of his career, at that point, he was the most commercially successful director in the history of cinema. And it was only until the arrival of Spielberg and James Cameron and all those guys that Stevenson was outdone. He was phenomenally successful. He made a ton of films with Disney in the 40s and 50s and 60s, none of which really have lasted the test of time. But it's interesting to know that this guy was the most successful director in the history of cinema. The reason why I've chosen this clip, Orla, is because you will notice there's an unusual word assigned to football here. And the reason why the character doesn't call it football, despite the fact he has an English accent, is because this movie was made for the American market. Okay. And as we know, in America, it's called soccer.
Yeah. His Majesty is in a frightful rage.
Excuse me, sir. As an all-round entertainer of sorts, I am considered not without talent. Perhaps I can cheer him up.
No. You don't understand. As everyone knows, His Majesty is the world's greatest soccer player. But due to a technical problem, the Royal Cup match cannot take place today. And His Majesty had so set his heart on it.
So there we go.
There we go.
Yeah.
And one final one. And I don't actually remember a football scene in this. Mrs. Doubtfire is on your list, but I don't remember football. Where do they go and play football in it?
You blink and you miss it. This happens, I think it's about after 50 minutes into the film. This is when Robin Williams, as we know, is separated from his wife, Sally Field, and he's trying to get visitation rights to see his children. So he disguises himself as this Scottish nanny called Mrs. Doubtfire. And by that stage in the story, Sally Field has gotten herself a new beau, played by Pierce Brosnan. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that when he has visitation with rights with his kids, it's a very, very quick montage sequence. It doesn't last more than 45 seconds, but they play soccer. His son and Wilder Robin Williams are in the park and they start kicking the ball around. Now, this is 1993. Now, call me conspiratorial, but you say to yourself, this is 1993, why on earth do they include a soccer ball? Surely they would have been playing baseball or basketball or something. But the USA, America, were hosting the World Cup the very, very next year. So I'm quite convinced that the then president of FIFA, the disgraced Zeb Blatter, thought it'd be good to product placement, and he cut a check and sent it to Rupert Murdoch, who was the head of 20th Century Fox. And that's the reason why the scene is in the film.
Conspiratorial, I'd say. Conspiratorial. We have a clip. Let's take a listen.
Miranda, what a pleasant surprise to see you home so early, dear. And who is your gentleman caller?
This is Stu. He just wanted to come home and meet the kids.
Oh, did he?
Oh, this must be the famous Mrs. Doubtfire. It's a pleasure to meet you. Oh. Yes, well, Miranda's been raving about you.
Odd. She's never mentioned you.
No?
No.
Well, then it's good to meet you.
You too?
Yes. I have a home in London. I was born there. What part of England are you from?
Here and there, dear. All over, really.
Yes. Mm. Accent's a little kind of muddled there.
Really? Well, so's your tan. No, dear. You know, can you help me with something? I found this outside.
Yes, this is off my Mercedes.
Off your Mercedes, dear? You own that big, expensive car out there. Oh, dear. Well, they say a man who has to buy a big car like that's trying to compensate for smaller genitals, is he?
There you go. There's Pierce Brosnan trying to spot exactly where that dodgy Scottish accent comes from.
Well, there are some examples of films. If you've had just about enough of the World Cup on TV, but you need to keep the rest of the household happy at the same time. Some suggestions for films that have just a little bit of footy in them and lots else that'll keep you entertained as well. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
You order.
Cheers. That's Stephen Bendict, our film correspondent, joining us there. And you're tuned into The Green Room on News Talk. We'll be back after this.